You are listening to the Experience Points Podcast, episode number 110 for the week of December 29th, 2010.
Welcome back to the Experience Points Podcast. I'm George Abor.
My name's Scott Juster.
And we are the co-creators of this wonderful site, experiencepoints.blogspot.com, where we podcast and write about video games. And last week we talked about our Game of the Year selection, and today we wanted to round off the end of the year by talking about some of the things that we didn't talk about last week. And these include games that didn't make our favorite list, but we still really enjoyed, maybe games we haven't finished, even games we haven't even played yet. Yes? We're willing to talk about games we have not even played, and maybe even talking a little bit about, you know, some of our plans for next year, maybe some of the games we're looking forward to. And this podcast will be significantly less formal. We'll just kind of chit-chat off the top of our heads. So where do you want to start?
How about things, games that we had to pick three, or else we would be just talking forever.
Yes, we did have to pick three. Yeah.
So, you know, and I had to leave some off that were kind of thought-provoking, if not maybe the most outstanding games.
Yeah.
And I think this is probably, we'll lead off with the big one. And it's a game that I don't feel like anyone is talking about anymore, even though I felt like in the months leading up to its release, hell, even the years leading up to its release, people were talking about it all the time. And that's Heavy Rain.
Yep.
Why aren't we talking about this game anymore?
You know, I don't know. You know, when Heavy Rain was announced, I think a lot of people, including myself, saw it as one of the games that might change how we approach storytelling in games. And that's because Quantic Dream and who's the guy from Quantic Dream? David Cage. You know, they talk about games in this way that makes you imagine a vision of some miraculous world, and it doesn't pay out. It didn't pay out in Indigo Prophecy, and certainly for you, it didn't pay out in Heavy Rain. And it's an interesting game, but it's not something that fundamentally changes how we approach games in the first place. And I think we just tend to forget about it. You know, what would bring us back to Heavy Rain? What could possibly bring us back?
I mean, I think if you start setting... if you start being more realistic and less, you know, Peter Molyneux-esque about it, I think Heavy Rain does some interesting things with QuickTime events.
Yeah, I totally agree. But so does God of War 3.
Yeah, I mean, God of War 3 is I think, fundamentally, like, more conservative in its QuickTime events. It is the press X not to die style, or, you know, continue on this path, you know, to succeed style of QuickTime event. Whereas Heavy Rain, there is a little bit more... you know, some of the QuickTime events are just meaningless. Like, if you're, like, scrambling eggs properly or something, like, it's not going to make or break your game. It's just, it's something that is, instead of being the exception to interacting with the game, it is the rule. And it makes it an interesting way to interact with the game, because instead of a high-pressure situation, where a QuickTime event is usually a high-pressure situation in most other games, a make-or-break or a do-or-die, Heavy Rain takes a different path with that, which I think is a pretty interesting way. I mean, if you're into that sort of thing, you would love it. If you're not, it makes it tedious, but it's still a unique way of looking at it.
Yeah, I would totally agree. And I really enjoy Heavy Rain, don't get me wrong. I think that game is a really fun and interesting experience. And when we talked about it in our own podcast, you know, our conclusion was that it may not be perfect, but everyone should play this game because it's very important and it's very interesting and does things that other games don't do. But that type of game experience doesn't really get recalled by a lot of fans, especially when people are rounding up their games of the year, you know? Mm-hmm. Michael Abbott at The Brain of Gamer recently wrote about, basically he was praising the Unity engine on the iPhone OS or the Mac OS. Mm-hmm. For being a game changer and being one of the most important advances in 2010. And I completely agree with him. It's a startling achievement. But it also doesn't appear in any games of the year, because it just, you know, that alone isn't enough to remind us about it, you know?
Yeah,
It almost feels like important games tend to be important only for a moment unless they achieve something else, some other form of transcendence, something like Braid, where that people always talk about, or BioShock, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's weird because I also think in the case of Heavy Rain, it got beat to the punch by a game like Uncharted 2, who did acting and face recognition and just like visual fidelity just as good or better than it did. And part of its hype, part of Heavy Rain's hype, was that, you know, it was going to be the most realistic digital portrayals of actors ever. And then it gets overshadowed, I think, by like the really excellent job that Naughty Dog does. Plus, there was some pretty wacky accents in that game.
Yeah, and maybe that's the situation. It's too burdened by its flaws, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And they're big flaws, and they're ones that people really disliked.
I mean, I still have to give it to them. I mean, there were scenes in that game, you know, like the scene that recalls Saw or something like that with the, you know, the finger off. Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's neat. They were able to do a lot with music and with camera angles that gave these otherwise meaningless actions of QuickTime events some weight. And I think artistically it's something that people could learn from.
I absolutely agree. Well, I mean, moving on to another game that I think is, you know, I don't think anyone's forgotten it, but personally it didn't make my list, but I think it's actually a really significant game. And that is Halo Reach. Uh-huh. And it did make a lot of other people's games of the year lists, but one of the reasons I want to talk about it is because you and I went through every Halo iteration up until Halo Reach, and you haven't played that game yet.
That's true.
You know, after the experience myself of playing it, it rings as probably one of the best entries into the franchise. And I feel like maybe I'm alone on this. I don't know if there's a lot of people who would agree. But the more I think about it, the more I can't help but consider it probably the best story that Bungie has told in their world. And I think it's also a testament to the sort of challenges that a company like Bungie faces and overcomes, you know, because the Halo franchise is massive and there's so many people to please, you know, and you look at something like the Halo series in comparison to something like the Call of Duty series, where it tends to be generally the same style of game, it's generally what people are expecting, and everybody loves it, and it's very satisfying, but it's not trying to accomplish something more than that. You know, I don't think Black Ops was trying to accomplish any more than what it is. I don't think it aims particularly high.
Mm. You mean like transcending its genre or something?
Yeah, transcending its genre or even surprising its players. You know, there's some really interesting things that Black Ops does that we talked about, but I don't think that it is aiming to kind of take that franchise and make it fun again for the developers in a way that I think Halo Reach does.
And is that because you think that they've basically perfected the way Halo plays and now they're just messing around with the plot and the narrative arc of it?
I think it's on the contrary. I think it's Halo Reach has changed enough of the dynamics of the game to say that they're not even aiming for that perfection anymore. You know, the fact that health packs make an appearance again in Halo Reach dramatically changes how you play the game. And it dramatically changes how I got used to playing the game from Halos 1, 2, and 3, where I might just run in somewhere and, you know, try to bash enemies in the head.
It sounds a lot like Halo 1, actually, as far as the health packs and as far as maybe the more tweaking again with how to fight, like melee versus ranged weapons.
That's true, but then there's also some of the bonuses that you get, like speed runnings or overshields.
Yeah,
and then even
jetpacks.
Yeah, and then even the level design itself is something far more remarkable than Halo ever could have achieved.
I'm looking forward to playing it because I think still my favorite Halo game is the first one, and that was just kind of, I think they did a good job with the simplicity of it, and it really relied on its AI and its battlefield design rather than flashy stuff.
Yeah.
And I think they've kind of gotten back to the point. You know, I left off at ODST, and ODST felt a lot like the original Halo to me.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see what they did with Reach in that.
I think I can go as far as saying I think that Halo Reach will replace the first Halo as your favorite game, judging based upon why you like the first one, but
I'm looking forward to it then.
Yeah. The gamble is on.
Dun dun. Well, before we go on to that one, I guess I'll say a game that I'm currently playing through right now. It came out towards the end of 2010, and it is Vanquish. We actually talked about this on a podcast. It was
the trailer.
It was because of the teaser. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is it as live comical? Action
stuff?
Because I remember we were kind of talking shit, Scott.
Oh yeah, I mean this game is ridiculous. it's extremely campy. And I think it knows it's ridiculous. They don't have any live-action FMV in the game, but they do have these just, like, uber-gruff Space Marines dudes that will, like, shoot a Russian robot and say, Dos Vidanya, bitches.
And there's, like, slow-mo shots, right?
The whole game is about slow motion, which I think this is the first game that I've seen that does slow motion correctly. And a slow motion in a way that really makes you feel like you're using slow motion to take a look at the battlefield rather than just kind of like using it as bullet time in Red Dead to cheat or whatever.
Yeah.
Because you can aim, but you're just really slowing everything down. If you use slow motion and a bullet is on, a trajectory to hit you, it'll hit you anyway. It's really a strategic thing rather than a crutch. Yeah. And so I think that's pretty neat. The other thing is that it's a cover-based shooter that solves a lot of the problems of cover-based shooters. The enemies are smart enough to keep moving and keep circling around you and flanking, and there's a lot of different enemy types, so you can't just sit behind one pylon and take out a whole army of dudes. Mm-hmm. Which is something you can do in Red Dead, like in one, the game that we both praised as one of the best games of the year. You can basically take care of any encounter by hiding behind one rock and picking off dudes one by one.
Yeah, and that's not even using the pseudo VAT system where it's just instant kills.
Yeah, and Vanquish feels a lot more like a third person shooter version of Space Invaders. You have certain types of cover, but you have to keep moving in order to line up your shots correctly. It's a very arcade-style game with this really beautiful art direction, and, the frame rate is always constantly locked. And, it's by Platinum Games, and they've been having a phenomenal year, and they've had a lot of success, and they just make really stylish games. They did Mad World, they did Bayonetta, and they did Vanquish now. And so as far as I'm concerned, they're probably one of the more interesting developers out there.
Because it seems like they're doing almost genre games. Super stylish, yeah. Super aesthetically jarring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're one of the Japanese developers that really seems to be taking chances. And, as opposed to, like, Final Fantasy 13, which is very traditional in some ways, like how they tell a story or how they design characters. Even if they do make, like, big mechanical changes, they're not trying to shock people with, what their game feels like.
Isn't Vanquished, wasn't it developed by the Resident Evil guy?
Yeah, it was a Shinji Mikami game.
That's right, Shinji Mikami.
Yeah, and so, I mean... this is the guy who made Resident Evil 4, and he makes really experimental games. He did God Hand and it's campy stuff that he's been associated with before, but it's just extremely polished. Every button press that you do is instantly responsive in a way that I think gets overlooked a lot. Like, it feels like an arcade game in the best way. Like, this is a very twitch-based, tactics-oriented game. You're not in it for the plot, or you're not in it to really, think about the greater social message it's conveying. this is something that's really about reactions.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like the Pac-Man DX game. It has the same feel.
Yeah. that's a good analogy. Well, to mention another game that I've been playing sort of right now, I go back and forth and off and on it, that I didn't get a chance to talk about, but I think is very interesting, and that is Amnesia Dark Descent.
Yeah, a lot of people were talking about that.
Yeah, and this is a game made by Frictional Games. They made Penumbra, which I also own but haven't played yet. Also a horror game. And, I've mentioned it before on the podcast numerous times, horror games don't usually resonate with me. I don't like to be scared by things. I feel like that's it's a very normal desire not to want to be afraid. But I don't know, there's something about Amnesia that is so very intriguing. There's so much mystery involved in it. And I think one of the reasons is that what you're scared of isn't something that relies on jump scares. It's not something that relies on the gore, you know. I never feel threatened by some crazy terrifying monster that's going to eviscerate me in Amnesia, mm-hmm. right? The scary elements of the game are basically the mystery involved and the sort of unsettling nature of the castle that you're in, and the way that the game plays with darkness. And this is by far the most interesting aspect of Amnesia, and that is it's almost like Eternal Darkness.
Oh, yeah. That's one of my favorite games.
You kind of have an insanity meter. In fact, you do have an insanity meter. And when you're in darkness, your insanity starts creeping up, right? Mm-hmm. So candles and light sources are consumable resources. And you can set up a candle in a lit area, and it stays there. So you kind of create your own safe zones. Mm-hmm. And it does something to the game that's really interesting geographically, because, you know, the layout of the map, in terms of how comfortable and safe you feel, is dictated by you.
Yeah.
You know, like, you are in charge in a large part of the level design of these maps. You know, and you need to hide, and the way that you've set up the maps dictates where you can hide. You know, did you light this room so you're not going to go crazy, or do you remember where you've been last, you know?
Huh.
And when you hide in a closet, very similar to Silent Hill Shattered Memories, where you're peeking out and you know that something very terrifying is just right outside and you don't want to look out. But yeah. It adds this extra layer of the dark and light mechanic, because you're hiding in the closet and the closet is dark and you're slowly going insane, you know?
Because R. Kelly's in there too.
Because R. Kelly's trapped in the closet with you, and there's a midget or something. It's really creepy, and it's a game that I haven't finished yet, even though I've had it for a long time.
Is the other part of the game like adventure game based? So there's this more active version, and then are the puzzles kind of like you know, similar to point and click stuff, or is it more active?
No, it's much more similar to point and click. It's much more of like an exploration kind of experience, coupled with that darkness mechanic where you're trying to figure out how to navigate, you know, the area without spooking yourself out too much.
Yeah.
One of the most memorable moments to me, and I'm only maybe halfway through the game, is in one of the early stages when you first see a glimpse of the monster, because it takes you by surprise. It just kind of walks past a door in a room that you know you have to go in. And so you prepare yourself, like, oh God, what was that? I don't know what that is. I need to go inside there. I have my candle just in case, and I've memorized the path out of this room. So if I need to run away, I know how. And then you go into the room, and it's nothing is there.
Oh, man, know? That's the worst.
It is the worst. It's absolutely terrifying. And just that, coupled with the lighting mechanics, coupled with, you know, how you set up the candles on your own, makes the entire castle completely unsettling and slightly terrifying, even when nothing's there.
I like it, especially because it's a very economical way of scaring players. You're not building, you know, it's like Jaws. You're being scared of something you don't see, and you know it's out there. You don't have, you're scared more of your imagination of it than the thing itself.
Yeah, and one cool thing I like about that aspect of it as well is that when I'm done being scared, I can laugh to myself and go, oh, like, that's, I'm just being crazy, there's nothing to be scared of. As opposed to in a game like Dead Space, when you confront the monster and then you just get mad and you're not scared anymore, but you're not scared because you've seen what is threatening you, and it's not all that bad.
And you've beaten it.
And whereas as Amnesia, I'm not scared anymore, but I'm not any more safe. It's not because I understand that which chases me or that which I fear.
So, this is constant terror.
It is. Yeah. Even talking about the game is creepy.
Well, maybe we should change the subject onto, maybe do a couple games that we haven't played, but that were on our radars. Maybe we can get to at some future date. One that probably won't surprise you to hear me say it, but it's killing me that I can't play Super Meat Boy.
Yeah. Well, you could play the browser version.
Yeah, I did monkey around with that a little bit, but I mean, the true way to play a platformers with a control, and I just don't have one that'll work on the computer.
Yeah. Nels Anderson recently wrote a great post on Above 49 about Super Meat Boy and the kind of difficulty and how you kind of grind your way, but through an educational method in Super Meat Boy that I think is really interesting. And I completely agree with it. That the game is so punishing and super hard to play for me. But you can't stop. It's always like one more try. Next time I'll do it. I'll get my Meat Boy to the end.
And the way that they set that up with the quick reloads and the compact levels, it's something that can introduce some of the old punishing style of bygone platformers and make it more palatable and just modernize it, I think. And I'd be interested to really feel that out.
Yeah. One game I haven't gotten around to playing that I feel like a lot of people have been really interested in and has actually appeared as Game of the Year for quite a few people, and that's Alan Wake. And, it doesn't actually look like a very fun game to me, like from what I've actually seen. Like, I don't think that I would enjoy the gameplay aspects of it. Mm. But, I really like the idea of a story about a storyteller and, having to kind of deal with his own little insanities. That sounds really intriguing to me.
Well, I mean, there's always been a lot of cinematic influence in games, and I feel like there's less literary stuff happening, and especially about a writer and things happening to a writer. It's an old trope in literature, a story within a story, but it's something that I don't feel like is been explored very often, that Stephen King style kind of meta story.
I totally agree. I mean, and there are some, like, I would love to see a game adaptation of something like House of Leaves, which just is a super experimental novel and is self-referential and refers to film and popular media. And yeah, you just don't see that sort of influence, even things that are, even something like a distrustworthy narrator, things that appear in, all of Nabokov's works, you just don't see as much in video games. And I think Alan Wake is kind of a peek into what that could be like.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to do because when you're playing a game, you are at least partially the narrator of it. So either
I'm distrustworthy into Scott.
Being impartial. I mean, maybe don't trust anyone, including yourself, but it's a strange trick to try to pull off. It's just unfortunate that it seems like that game didn't get a lot of traction. It's also unfortunate that I believe it released the same day as Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah, that wouldn't be their fault.
I think that would be a good candidate for downloadable content, like episodes. You could do it like chapters, if you're going to really pursue the literary theme of it.
I think Red Dead could explore the literary themes too. But
well, before we get back to Red Dead, what else should we talk about before we wrap it up here?
Well, why don't we talk a little bit about some of the games that are coming out next year that we might be particularly excited for? And there are a few that I'm just going to name right off the bat that everyone knows I'm going to be excited for, and I'm not even sure they're going to come out next year. Like Mass Effect 3 was announced at the VGAs, Spike's VGAs. Mm-hmm. That game looks great, sort of, from based upon the pictures of Reavers destroying London.
That game looks great, sort of.
it's one of the difficult things about talking about games that are coming out next year when all we've seen are pre-rendered
cutscenes.
And I have serious doubts that Mass Effect 3 will launch next year. I think it'll probably be pushed back.
Oh, interesting. I thought BioWare was pretty... I thought they were usually pretty on top of it.
Didn't they push back... I mean, Mass Effect 2 wasn't supposed to come out in February, was it?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe I just have the wrong perception of their ability to stick to their deadlines.
So, yeah, there were a few that I think we're hands down excited about. I think Gears of War 3, you and I are both excited about. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is The Last Guardian supposed to come out in 2011?
It is supposed to, and that's another one I think that's like, maybe it won't come out. We've waited this long. Yeah. Diablo 3, maybe that'll come out next year.
Yeah, who knows? Whenever Blizzard is done tweaking the refresh time on your cooldown for your cure magic, they'll put it out.
But let's see, what's another? Monaco. So Monaco is supposed to come out next year, and that's a game that I'm very excited for.
Mm-hmm.
Spy Party as well. Both of those are kind of indie games that take one single idea and then just roll with it, and I absolutely love that. I love it when people do something like, you know, something like Monaco that is trying to recreate the experience of a heist.
Yeah.
And focuses on that, and everything is in service to that, you know. And I've been following some of the images and mechanics as they change, and it looks great. It looks really fantastic.
Is Jonathan Blow's game supposed to come out next year?
I don't know. Probably. I mean, the only thing we've seen of that are the videos that are very minimalistic.
Yeah, I mean, it seems a lot of that stuff is just placeholder artwork. But, I mean, after Braid, which, again, Braid was a game that took up a lot of my, like, thinking time in 2010, even though it wasn't released in 2010. After Braid, I'm pretty much willing to to follow him whatever experimental path he goes down.
Yeah, I'm all for that. Yeah, and the same goes for Team Ico. You know, both of those games, I hope they come out next year, because I'm looking forward to playing them.
Mm-hmm.
What about you? Is there anything that stands out in particular?
Well, I mean, we'll probably talk about this on a future podcast, so I won't say too much about it, but I'm pretty intrigued with the Tomb Raider refresh.
Yeah, I could see that.
And it's not because I even necessarily like Tomb Raider games very much. I've never even played a Tomb Raider game to completion, so it's not like I'm a big fan of the series, but I am interested to see how the new Lara coexists with all of the other third-person action-adventure games that are out and that are quite popular now. I think it's an interesting reboot that they're doing with the franchise.
I'm looking forward to the inevitable Drake-Lara crossover.
I'm sure there's already slash fiction out there. You could probably just Google
yeah,
that.
Something just undoubtedly sexy.
And then the next generation of their kids, they get their own games too.
Oh, you could have a family game where, like, the kids have to make little fortresses and find hidden temples and stuff.
If anyone in the film industry hears you say that, they're going to start pre-production on that right now.
Yeah, well, good. Portal 2, that's another one. Portal 2, I'm very excited for.
Yeah, and I mean, there's another Batman game coming out. There's a lot of big sequels coming out. You know, that Batman game that I never played from last year is getting its Arkham City is coming out.
Yeah, that's a good point. Are there any major IPs?
I mean, off the top of my head, it's kind of hard.
Like, I wouldn't say Bioshock Infinite counts.
And plus, that's 2012 anyway. Oh, I mean, yeah, that's true. They've already put that out there. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to think of the big publishers. You know, the big publishers seem to be sticking with sequels. Yeah, I'm not sure. It's really, and this is, like, judging from our last podcast about, you know, our favorite games, it's been a very sequel-driven year, and it looks like it's even extending into the coming one as well.
And I feel like it's always kind of been that way, and that's been something a lot of people have criticized. You know, people tend to look down upon sequels, I think, a bit. But mm-hmm. I think this year has proven that we can get really interesting and experimental games that are, you know, that are already in existing franchises, that are already taking, yeah. You know, instead of getting what we expect, we get something that we don't expect. And that's exciting. That's really cool. And I'm looking forward to, you know, Mirror's Edge 2 when that comes out eventually. It means that
we can't always
presume to know what a game's going to be like anymore just because it's an addition to a franchise.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, listeners will get a little bit more on that conversation thread when we eventually talk about Bioshock 2, which we've finally gotten around to playing.
Which we'll probably do next week.
Yeah. Man, we're just so organized. So should we wrap up the leftovers of 2010, put them back in the fridge?
2010 is gone. It's no more. We're moving on. Greener pastures.
We'll never, ever talk about a game from 2010 again. Well, if you want to write in with some of the overlooked games that that you played this past year, experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
Also, let us know if there's any games coming out next year that you're particularly looking forward to. You can leave those thoughts in the comment section to this podcast. You can also leave your thoughts in the comment section to any of our posts. We update the website Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday evenings. And once again, that's experiencepoints.blogspot.com. And until next year.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.